Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Get more points. Come on. Come on, boys. That's it. Watch the fiver. Soften it up. Sports.
This is Sports Sunday.
Jokic has it. Clock ticks. Gonna put one up. Jokic for the win. It's good. Jokic got it off in time.
With Rashawn Taylor and Joe Fisher.
First and goal. Mahomes flings it.
It's there. Hartman. Jackpot. Kansas City.
Hate
me or love me. You watched. That's all you could do.
And 1080.
Who do you think you are?
The Fan.
Good morning. Welcome into Football Sunday right here on 1080 The Fan. 99.5 HD2. YouTube, Twitch for the kids, however you are listening, the Odyssey app, how could I forget, however you're listening to us this morning, welcome in. Glad to be back. It's been,
had two white boy weekends in a month, bro.
Was it two?
One sales retreat and then one, well, you just said you hadn't seen Rashad in a month.
Well, it will be a month next Sunday.
Oh, wow.
Yes, because, last week I was out and then the week before we didn't have a show.
Exactly.
And so it's been, this is my first football Sunday in like 3 weeks. That's too long. That's an unacceptable hiatus.
And then we don't get our co-host back.
Yeah, and then Rashad is sick. Who does that in November? Who gets sick?
I already did.
Yeah, so. No, I am definitely waiting. I think it was like 2-3 weeks ago when it sort of dawned on me. I'm like, oh yeah, it's this time of year. I'm like, that's going to be happening at some point.
Well, get healthy, because I've had to pull double duty and it seems like I don't get to host unless I'm sitting in this seat. So, like, you know, like, somebody else get back here, because, yeah, my brain's spinning. There's been too much football to watch.
I'm a different kind of sick this morning, but it's manageable. You know, it's not contagious. But, you know, when you have a late night Thai food, some things can happen the next day.
A little spicy.
Yes. I got a little Thai food ordered around like 9 or something
that
like that.
That is late.
9:30. Yeah, me and the girl, we didn't have dinner until later on. I didn't get to her house until later in the day because JoJo needed a nap. That's for sure. I woke up early Saturday morning, got some golf in me, and then I met up with some friends over in Sherwood at Langer's for the Ducks game. And I would say I was yawning that whole second half. I was a tired boy. I need to start getting my circadian rhythm in a better rhythm, I guess is the word.
I feel like even with the extra hour last night, I'm still exhausted. I threw a Halloween party on Friday, and I had way too many Miller High Lifes. Like, it was one of those where you lose
too much candy corn.
Yeah, you lose count of the number of drinks that you've had, and it's like, it doesn't matter the amount. Let's just have a good time. And then Saturday morning was not such a good time.
Where are we at on candy corn? Because I love it. I feel like I am in the minority on candy corn.
The regular candy corn, I'm down. But if you start to go, like, add the chocolate to it, and then you get, like, pumpkin candy corns, which are just too big.
It's, I was going
to
say, that's too much candy corn. Yeah. No, but I am...
little candy corn's fine.
I am, it is election season. That is one of the agendas I am running on, is start getting candy corn more respect around this country. It is a Halloween staple. I absolutely love it. I don't see why it gets so much shade. Why people are so anti-candy corn.
Ladies and gentlemen, candy corn. All right. come out to give your speech, stump for votes.
That's the ticket right there. Fisher Candy Corn 2024.
Just come out in a candy corn suit. Just keep the Halloween theme going.
Isn't there, I was just thinking, what could you run with to give you the best chance? Isn't there like a city somewhere that has a dog as their mayor?
Oh, I think you're right.
I'm pretty sure they have like a golden retriever or something somewhere. Sunil, California. There's been multiple towns.
It just goes to show you how effective politicians actually are.
This is on catster.com. So I'm going to think that they know their stuff. There's been 10 U.S. towns with animal politicians.
Yeah, there was one in Idlewood. A lot in California, it seems like. You already named one Cali town. I'm finding a second one. I'm seeing the Wikipedia for Mayor Max the Second.
In 81, Bosco Ramos was the mayor of Sunil, California. He had a nice little run from 81 to 84.
Well, after Mayor Max the Second died, his cousin, Max the Third, was sworn in as the mayor of Idlewood, Pine Cove, California, in December of 2022. So
Max the Third?
Yeah, there I believe, if this is still accurate, is a current dog mayor down in Cali.
Good for him. What is his immigration policy? Sorry, Max the Third. What's your stance on the Israel-Palestine conflict, please? God,
once again, politicians
Woof, woof.
I think politicians could say the same thing even if they were humans, and we'd still probably vote for them. It's kind of sad.
Talkeetna, Alaska.
That makes sense.
That was just a great cat name, Stubbs. Stubbs was the honorary mayor ginger cat from 1997 to present.
Well, does honorary really count?
What was this article wrote? 2024? The cat's still alive? 1997?
That's an old cat. Wow. 24, 25 years? Yeah, dang. Or 27, sorry, excuse me.
Oh, actually, no, the Stubbs is now dead. But a brother-sister cat duo named Aurora and Denali took over his duties. Good for them. Those are Nepo babies right there.
They must enjoy that mayoral yarn that they get. This is weird. Animals running cities is just absurd.
Rabbit Hash, Kentucky, back in 1998.
Rabbit?
Lucy Liu was, what is that kind of dog here? I'm trying to think. The Border Collie, that's what it is. A Border Collie was the mayor of Rabbit Hash, Kentucky. The fact that we've had multiple. Oh, here we go. Lajitas, Texas. They had a goat as a mayor.
There you go.
1986. What was this goat's name? Clay Henry. And actually, they've had multiple descendants. It's almost like Ugga, or what's the Tennessee mascot where they just pass it along? Like one dog dies, and so they just keep the Ralphie the Fourth and
you,
stuff. Yeah. In Colorado.
Clay Henry. Wasn't that the name of, like, the dude on the Jared Fogle Subway commercials? Like, hey, Clay Henry. I swear. Like, one of those, like, weight loss commercials that, like, everybody in America started losing weight after $5 footlongs came out.
I'm not familiar with that. I think his name was just Jared.
No, after. There was, like, a commercial of, like, regular Joes and Jennies.
Maybe it was this goat. Maybe it was a Subway sandwich fan.
The goat. And that's pretty early. I mean, 80s? They got this going in the 80s, and Animal is the mayor?
They're on Clay Henry the Fourth.
Oh, okay. So they started this long ago.
All right. We got our first Washington dog mayor.
Wow, not surprised.
East Sound, Washington. Which I'm East guessing Sound? Is east of Puget Sound.
These are all, like, I'm reading about, like, this Mayor Max, the second and third situation in Idlewood. This is, like, an unincorporated area. These aren't actual cities, right? These are, like, just, what do they call them, like, consensus areas where you kind of are an established neighborhood, but you don't really do anything.
Yeah, this East Sound, Washington, unincorporated community on Orcas Island in San Juan.
Yeah, County. Unincorporated community. Yeah. Thank you. That's what it's called.
Yeah, it probably has like 50 people in it.
So no tax dollars actually go to the dog or cat running said unincorporated area.
I wish. More catnip for everyone.
Be absurd, but kind of
more
cool.
Puppy chow for all of my constituents. This dog's name in East Sound, Washington, is Sweet Girl Love.
No.
That's an interesting name.
Wrong.
Hot.
Wrong.
Now this dog, this is a Great Pyrenees named Duke. This was in Cormorant Village, Minnesota. He looks very mayoral.
Cormorant Village just sounds like a mayor named Duke needs to be the guy running the town.
And just to look at him, he's got a little top hat that says mayor on it.
That's cute.
That's adorable.
Yeah, no, I'm looking at this now. That's freaking adorable.
All right, so we've got a couple dogs, a cat. Oh, we got the second goat on this list. In Fairhaven, Vermont.
I'm seeing trends here, Joe.
A goat named Lincoln.
Goats, well, cats, and dogs.
Lincoln is a very political name, you know, named after one of our former presidents.
Ah.
We got a golden retriever in Michigan named, Rosie. We got another golden retriever in California, Idlewild, California.
That's the one. That's Max the second. That we
there
were
you go.
About.
Yeah. Oh, they got even a little car with decals on it. Mayor Max the second.
So they get a little presidential limo or a mayoral limo, I guess you should say. That's cute.
I did not hump that person's leg. Okay, this is all just false news. All right. I don't even know that person's leg.
I feel like we're coming up with an animated sitcom that's actually probably already been written.
I mean, BoJack Horseman is essentially, you know, like human versions of pets and animals. Fantastic show, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Going Rick and Morty. They could do some fun things in that show, too, with that.
And then Georgetown, Colorado. We've got
Georgetown.
We got a Bernese mountain dog named Parker.
Should have played like some election music under this. Bum, bum, ba, 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 da, 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 da.
More rawhide bones for everyone.
Oh, being a politician sucks. Maybe the country would be better if we were run by dogs and cats. What do you think?
Let's give them a shot.
I still haven't filled out my ballot yet, actually. Speaking of real voting.
I'm 90% of the way there. I still got to write my name in a few more times, but I'm almost done.
Joe Fisher, voting
Fisher,
for Joe Fisher.
Candy Corn, 24.
All right, write that in not just for president, but for every available office in the state of Oregon as well, please.
Someone is very much not down for Candy Corn. They are texting, hell no, go eat a candle. Oh, come on.
Yeah, see, I get it. And that's when I talk about like those little pumpkins, that's kind of what I feel like I'm biting into. No. So,
candy corn's ones. Great. I need to I need to have my own little candy corn bowl next year because I know that there's a lot of people that do not F with candy corn. I know that nobody will F with my candy corn.
Yeah.
Be my own little Percy bowl.
Ah, you're going to be the Kevin Malone of the Odyssey office. I
yes.
love it. Little bowl
yes.
of candy.
But we're out of October. Crazy that we're in November 2024. Crazy
no
that we're almost...
shave November.
Yeah, actually, I coincidentally went with the stash. You can see on the YouTube. And it's borderline like a murder stash because I say that anybody with a blonde mustache, just don't. just don't.
Well, it'll get thicker as the month goes along, sir.
Yes, but also like... I don't know if it's the Scandinavian, the Norwegian in me, but my mustache gets... It's not a dark mustache all the way, but it's not a light mustache.
So you have multicolored facial
hair. Yeah, it's got a little red in there. It's got, like, on the edges, it's a little bit lighter, you know? So, I mean, it's not as murderous or predatorial as it could be.
Just a little predatorial.
Yeah, but I went and shaved the face on Friday morning, Friday afternoon, something like that, not knowing it was Movember.
Ooh.
And forgetting that it was indeed November 1st. So the mustache is here to stay.
Yeah, I did the same thing. I trimmed up the neck. I got everything all straightened up and trimmed on like my beard. And I'm like, oh, crap. No, all right. I can't really do this anymore, I guess, if I'm playing the game. But honestly, 2 weeks in, if I look scruffy enough, I might just quit the game.
Yeah, Movember, annual event involving the growing of mustaches during the month of November to raise awareness of men's health issues such as prostate cancer. It feels like I have prostate problems this morning after late night Thai food. Testicular cancer and men's suicide. The issues that... as we say that men, they kind of don't talk about stuff. They have to put on the image of a tough guy and I'm fine and I'm just going to keep motoring along here. And
no, it's okay to go to the doctor.
Yeah. Go, you know, definitely go get your prostate checked if you're above the age of, 40, 45 or something. Get a colonoscopy. Boy, I remember when my dad had to go get that and I had to take him there and then pick him up.
Yeah.
I, you know, dropped him off, went and got lunch or something, and the phone call, when he was done, he definitely was like, yeah, I'm done.
Well, I think
I was like, you sound disheveled, my man.
The colonoscopies, I mean, obviously not just limited to men, too. Didn't they lower the age down to like 40 or something like that?
Because, I think they say it's when you turn 40, you want to go get all cleaned out.
Because colon and pancreatic cancers are spreading like wildfire, which apparently the correlation, at least one of them they've found, is the taurine in energy drinks. It's just so crazy the things that we find could be related to this. As Joe drinks his energy drink, blasted with taurine.
I don't know if this one has taurine.
They all have
taurine.
It says
concentrated orange juice. Right here on the label. Okay.
But in there, I bet you there's taurine.
Didn't they decide taurine? Oh, yeah, there it is.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Didn't they decide taurine was it bull testosterone or something like that?
But it's an acceptable amount, can still be fed to the public.
I am raging like a bull right now. I'm ready to rage on this football Sunday.
Let's go, baby.
It is Movember. It is almost the end of election season, which means no more political commercials.
And I won't grow a mustache because my wife hates them. So if I ever grow a mustache, my wife will divorce me, unfortunately.
Yeah, my girlfriend made the biggest mistake of saying that she did not mind it so much.
Ooh,
and I was like, that was, you messed up saying that because it's going to be around a lot more often now.
That's funny.
We got to get to football, though. We got to get to footballing. We got 45 minutes until the NFL kickoff week 9, question mark? Is that what it is?
Yes. Yeah,
week 9.
Because teams that are going to go 2-7 this week are pretty much officially out of the playoffs, right?
For the most part, yeah. And I kind of wanted to do a middle Saints. Of the season State of the Union, just kind of take a look at teams. Teams that are in a position as far as record-wise where it's like, are any of these teams able to make a run? And then also kind of look at some strengths of schedules to see which teams have the easiest go at it, specifically the NFC West, because...
Oh, my God.
Right now, 7 to 8 games through, total crapshoot.
Can you say wide open?
Yes, 100%. Now, I'm sure that there's one team that we would probably favor over the others, but again, at this moment in time, it is essentially all tied up in the NFC West. So... as we reach this middle point of the season, let's take a look at the NFL and, again, see if any of these teams with around the 2-loss, 3-loss mark have a chance to make a comeback, look at some strength of schedule stuff. In the second hour, of course, get into college football, Ducks get a W. Also, some upsets in the top 12, I guess you could say, and almost a few other upsets that could have happened. But we got our first college football playoff rankings on Tuesday. I think that's the only thing that's happening on Tuesday.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that's the only thing that we have to worry about on Tuesday. So let's get into it. NFL, State of the Union. Only right that we do a little State of the Union with this political window that we're in right here. We'll get to that next here, Football Sunday, Danny the Fan. All right, we're about halfway through this NFL season. Some teams playing 8 games so far, some playing 7. We're getting to that halfway mark, but I figured take a look at the playoff picture, but also look at some of these teams with around the 2-loss mark and see if there's anybody with 2 losses, 3 losses, kind of below 500 that has a chance to make a late season push. Let's start in the NFC. We got a handful of teams at 4-4, but the ooh.
Sorry, you're talking football. Gotta get the bells up.
All right, in the NFC at 4-4. Or with like 4 wins around there, just outside the playoff picture, the Bears, the Bucks, the Bears. Quite frankly, they should be 5-2.
Yeah.
Buccaneers 4-4, 49ers 4-4, Seahawks 4-4. I think you could see just about any one of those teams sneaking into the playoff.
Yeah.
Considering that the Cardinals currently have the division, they lead the division at this point. In time, the Vikings are one of the wild card teams. I'm still waiting for that train to come off of the tracks. But teams around the 3-win, 2-win, I mean, really, I think there's only about one team here that potentially could have a chance in the NFC to make a late season run. And it is my Dallas No, I'm kidding.
Just like, really? You're overpaid? Bloated.
I'm back on it, baby.
Injured and no running back Dallas Cowboys? Yeah.
Yeah, Ezekiel Elliott will not even be making the trip to Atlanta because he sucks. I wish that would be what shows up on the inactives list. Ezekiel Elliott out. Sucks.
I just don't understand why they didn't plan better at that position this season.
Well, when you're an 80-plus-year-old senile old man that has an ego larger than... well, a billionaire. Wait, he is a billionaire. Then that's what happens. That's what happens. The only team in the NFC that is really outside of the playoff picture at 3-4 below 500 is the Los Angeles Rams. If they can get healthier, if they can keep Kupp and Puka Nacua, we saw it a couple weeks ago against the Vikings, how good they looked on that Thursday night football game against them. You know, they got a little help from the refs in the end with that face mask that was not called on them. But granted, they were still winning that game and still looked very impressive in that game. Big game today against the Seattle Seahawks right here on 1080 The Fan. That game has a lot of implications. It's a 125 kick. They have yet to play this season, those two teams. So this is the first matchup. I believe. And what's the next one? I'm trying to look at the schedule here to see when
Seahawks' final game of the season.
That's
against
right.
The Rams.
Thank you. Yes.
1-5.
On January 5th. Yes. So, but this game, Seahawks Rams, I mean, Seahawks sitting at 4-4, losing four of their last five after starting very hot 3-0 to start the season. So talk about needing a big win for the Seahawks, especially after getting embarrassed at home last week against the Bills. But I would say out of the NFC, the Rams are the only team that is below 500 that can make a late season run. Matt Stafford, still a great quarterback.
Yep.
Still have Sean McVay, Super Bowl winning coach. And again, as long as you have those two wide receivers and you can have those weapons, Kyren Williams is like second in the league in touchdowns also.
Oh, yeah.
So I believe that the Rams still have a great chance of sneaking into the playoffs.
No, quietly, the Rams have one of the better offenses in the NFL when they're healthy, even at the tight end position with Hunter Long and Colby Parkinson catching balls between the two of them. Like, McVay has so many options. They're not the Niners, but I'd say like they're the Niners 2.0 when they're healthy. Those wide receivers are the two best in the NFL. But then you've got a good defense on Seattle's end. And really quickly, by the way, the Rams, they were in their two games that they lost, I believe, to the Raiders and to the Bears the week before. The Bears just scored like a fourth quarter touchdown, essentially, to kind of put it away for them with DeAndre Swift running it in. And then, you know, same story, which, yeah, you were injured, though, against the Raiders. So you understand maybe why they didn't have such a good game. So a couple of those losses, especially as you got closer to this point in the season, maybe could have gone the other way for the Rams. And then the Seahawks, they've had some injuries. Ernest Jones, he's questionable. He's been fighting, but obviously playing very well on the defensive end, one of their leaders for them. I mean, goodness gracious, they still have. It's almost like classic defense for the Seahawks. They just always seem to find a way. You know, you got guys like Julian Love and Devin Witherspoon in the secondary having some success. And then if Geno Smith can show up every game, maybe they could do something. So that's kind of been the problem for Seattle is Geno Smith just, he won't show up like after the next game that he has a really good one. All of a sudden, oh, interceptions. So I hope they can be consistent, but that would mean Geno Smith has to be, like, good from week to week, right?
The Rams are the favorites in today's game against the Seattle Seahawks. They are 1.5-point favorites, over, under 48.5, if you want to go there. Money line, I mean, it's even for the Seahawks, minus 120 for the Rams. This should be a fun game. Really looking forward to this game that you can hear right here on 1080 The Fan. The pregame show starts right after football Sunday. Looking at the rest of the NFL and the AFC, there is a lot of teams in that 4-3-2 win-loss total. But again, I think out of the two lost teams, I really can't believe any of them at this point. I mean, you have the Patriots, Jags, Raiders, Browns at two wins. The only team that does have two wins that I could maybe see make a run as long as their quarterback does not die, and that is the Miami Dolphins at 2-5.
I mean, he can't be scared that he's going to die. He's back. I think the doctors have said he's healthy.
Oh, my God. Did you see him last week when he decided to scramble and take a run? And everybody was like, slide! Get out! Please, for the love of God. I think even the Cardinals, like, he went to slide. The Cardinals were even like, dude, just please slide. Like, just please.
Don't make me do this.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I do not want to just add. Come on, please. I don't want to be the one that ends your career. Reggie Ray in real life form out here. So the Dolphins at 2-5, they need a lot of things to go right, including getting a win against the Buffalo Bills today.
That's going to be tough going today.
The Bills are 6.5-point favorites in some of the books that I've seen, and they're getting a good amount of public money. I would say take the Dolphins to cover. I mean, Dolphins did lose to the Cardinals last week. Cardinals covered there. But I would think that this being an NFC East matchup, Dolphins coming off a tough loss, Bills coming off of a big win, feeling good about themselves, but I think that the Dolphins can keep it within a touchdown.
Yeah, but Zach Sealer's not going to be in for the Dolphins today. Zach Sealer, their defensive tackle, like stud that is pretty much their pressure.
Look at you going deep on the depth chart.
Well, if you're losing, this is directly from John Gruden. I love his videos on YouTube. You've got to, if you're not watching John Gruden football.
Wow, look at this chick in a bikini, man. She looks great.
Seriously.
Oh, wrong footage.
I think he throws that in there. In here.
That's for my email inbox. Sorry about that.
That's a pretty good one, buddy. No, but his breakdowns are pretty awesome. And Zach Sealer is out.
She's getting my Spider 2Y banana. Very excited right now.
Yeah, he made the point that if you lose the inside pressure, and then they also have been dealing with some injuries in the middle linebacker and defensive secondary core. So if you lose the inside pressure and the outside pressure for Miami, what are you going to do to try to combat Josh Allen? And Josh Allen is actually, I don't know if it's the Bills' offensive line more or Josh Allen's ability to scramble, but they have been sacked the least in all of football. The Buffalo Bills, I think, have only allowed 10 sacks this year.
I want to say the least amount of turnovers as well.
Exactly. So Miami's got a hard-fought battle today. I'm honestly surprised that the spread is only 6.5. I know the public money thinks it's a good spot for Miami, but I think Buffalo's going to roll today. So one of those teams that, yeah, it might start to fade really quickly. If you lose today, one of those teams seems to be the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, the Bills have only given the ball away 3 times this year. 14 total takeaways, had the best turnover differential in the NFL.
And they just got a new wide receiver. So,
looking at the rest of the AFC, as far as like 3 win teams, there's only two teams with 3 wins. That is the 3-6 New York Jets. The 3-5 Cincinnati Bengals.
Can you believe the Jets won on Thursday?
I can, actually.
That was nuts. That game sucked.
I can because I have a new betting algorithm that is a surefire hit every time. Whatever my natural instincts are line, if it matches what is happening with public money, then it's not going to happen.
So you fade you and the public.
So I saw immediately, I was like, wow, the Texans are only favored by like 1.5. Or I think it was the Jets that were favored.
Yeah, it was 1.5 to 2.5, I think, was the line movement.
That's correct. The Jets were favored by like 1.5, 2. And I was like, what? That's weird. I was like, natural instinct says bet the Texans to cover. They're probably going to win that game. And then I checked the public money and saw that people were betting on the Texans to cover that as well. I'm like, okay, now I know that's not going to happen. And the Jets are going to win on Thursday night. And sure enough, that's what happened.
I mean, people, they forget that Nico Collins is out and that Stephon Diggs is out. And hey, Joe Mixon's really good, but he can only run it so much. And he is like 28, 29 years old.
Texans are in a weird spot right now.
Yeah, CJ Stroud not having the best second season so far. What is it like? I think 3 or 4 of his games are under 200 yards passing and 1 game under 100 yards total passing. He has just been atrocious.
Yeah, and even that win against the Colts, they did everything possible to gack that down their leg late in that game. So, but out of those 3-win teams, I mean, the Bengals, they could make a run, but boy, they need to start getting some stuff figured out because they got absolutely embarrassed at home against the Eagles last week, 37-17. I had my tankathon up, my strength of schedule to throw out.
That was only
remaining schedule for some of these teams.
That was only a 3.5 or 4.5 point line, too, right?
Oh yeah,
that's just crazy.
They got and then they just got ran out of the building.
Vegas did not think that Philly is that much better than them.
Yeah, as far as the Bengals, they're kind of middle of the pack as far as strength of schedule remains. The Arizona Cardinals, one of those NFC West teams, with a very easy road the rest of the way. 31 hardest schedule left remaining, so the second easiest remaining schedule. The Rams are kind of in that 7 range. What is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah, 7th easiest schedule left. Miami with the 6th easiest schedule left remaining. So, I mean, for those teams at least, it's, favorable that they will maybe hopefully make a run just based on their schedule there.
It's because you get to play the NFC West like 4 more times. And I see here on the Cardinals' schedule they have the Patriots and the Panthers. So I think that right there gives you the answer as to why they have the second easiest remaining schedule. That is a cakewalk. Minus the Vikings and the Niners at the end of the season, maybe the Rams too. That's a cakewalk.
I'm very intrigued, though, to see what happens in this, seeds 4 through 8 in the AFC, how this all shapes out. Because as we just mentioned, the Houston Texans, a very weird team right now. The Broncos at 5 and 3, do they come back crashing to earth? The Ravens, they're at 5 and 3, but I think we all expect them to be there at the end of the season, whether it's winning their division or at least being a wild card team, because the Pittsburgh Steelers and Mike Tomlin, unbelievable once again.
Yeah, Brandon Sprague, you can Venmo me that $50. We bet 50
on whether he was going to finish below 500.
Yeah, Mike Tomlin this year.
I didn't think it was going to happen.
I did, because I thought that he was going to win, because he always finds a way, and they actually have good players this year.
2-7 coming the rest of the way. Watch out,
no,
Jordan.
No, he's going to use Russell Wilson in the perfect way, allow him to throw, what, 15, 20 times a game? He's going to do what Bill Belichick did with the first season of that terrible backup now, Mac Jones, in Jacksonville, and make something out of nothing.
And then the Chargers and the Colts right now sit at 7th and 8th in the league, respectively. Chargers, God, their offense just needs to get something going here, because it is just, with Justin Herbert, that poor guy, he has no weapons. And then the Colts, now that they actually have a quarterback that wants to play the entire game, my God, Joe Flacco and them might actually make a little run here. But they do have one of the more difficult schedules the rest of the way.
Yeah, if you've been living under a rock, Joe is talking about Anthony Richardson last Sunday tapping out during a series in which the offense was still on the field. He tapped out for a third down because he said he was too winded.
Does he not get points for honesty?
No. You get no points for honesty as a $20, $30 million man. Absolutely not. I get it. He's, what, maybe less than 12, 13 starts into his career total. Might be a little too early to give up on Anthony Richardson. But you're the starting quarterback of an NFL team. That is like the last thing that you want to hear from the leader of your men. Like, this is supposed to be the toughest guy on the field, right? Like, yeah, they get protected by the rules nowadays, but you do see tough, gritty performances all the time that lead you. That's the best. That's how Pat Mahomes gets it done. That's how Aaron Rodgers got it done when he was younger. Matt Stafford coming back from the injuries that he's dealt with. Tua Tagovailoa fighting through concussions. Anthony Richardson doesn't sound like he has that mentality. So yeah, give it to Joe Flacco, 39-year-old stud.
Hey, he said he was tired and that he wasn't going to lie. I want honesty in my starting quarterback, and I'm glad he gave it to us.
Yeah, honesty to your head coach, and then your head coach tells you, no, get the F back on the field, kid.
All right, we're going to take a break. I'm going to leave you with this, though. Since 2000 to 2022, there were 66 quarterbacks selected in the first round of the NFL draft, and 25 of those quarterbacks were benched at some point while on their rookie contract. There has only been one quarterback who has started a playoff game or was selected to the Pro Bowl with the team that drafted him after being benched. That was Mitchell Trubisky. So this definitely looks like a death blow to Anthony Richardson and his tenure with the Indianapolis Colts. All right, we'll move it along. Want to talk about Anthony Richardson a little bit more, but also just we also have an incident with Chicago Bears. We have a few other teams that are just running into some mid-season woes, but also one franchise that is, I can't believe it, wanting players to come play for them. What kind of alternate universe are we living in?
That was quick.
We get to that next here, Football Sunday, 1080 The Fan, but first, Schultzy with the SportsCenter update.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
What a year does for your franchise. As we get approaching to the trade deadline, there is a story that came out from one Adam Schefter that apparently people want to go to Washington.
It's crazy.
I mean, just goes to show what ownership does for your franchise. I mean, we are literally, has it been a full year? Is this season one with the new owner for the Washington Commanders?
Yeah, this is like pretty much new everything, right?
But yeah, he's reporting that players want to go to Washington. And I mean, right now they are one of the more exciting franchises in the league, obviously, with Jaden Daniels having a great rookie year. Dan Quinn, love him as a head coach, loved him as a defensive coordinator for the Cowboys. He was a great coach for the Falcons, getting them to the Super Bowl. Let's not remind them what happened in that Super Bowl, but he got them there. He has just got that team full of piss and vinegar right now. It is, you know, being an NFC East Cowboy fan, watching that division closely my entire life, I've never really had a problem with Washington, seeing that they've never really been a problem in that division. So seeing a team like them actually have some sort of success and with likable players, likable coach, and also not having a complete dirtbag owner, it
helps.
Yeah. Wouldn't you know it? Hey, Jerry. Hey, Cowboys. Take note. What happens when you have good ownership and someone that actually seemingly is a good person and knows what they're doing? But yeah, Adam Schefter that reporting that players are wanting to go to the Washington Commanders. So that's a team that right now, trend stock going up. Some teams, and again, like you might say that, oh, wow, it's a mess in Indianapolis with the Anthony Richardson deal. But actually, it's like, well, hell, now that Joe Flacco's starting, they might actually have a chance. I mean, he was able to get the Browns to the playoffs last year after Deshaun Watson went down with his injury. And now you're benching Anthony Richardson. So,
again, sorry, I just saw Brian Robinson's out today, so that sucks.
Ah, so
he's my fantasy running back.
The Commanders going up against the Giants today. That's a 10 a.m. kick there. But, yeah, I mean, Washington Commanders, one of the teams that's trending upward in the league right now. The Colts, again, I would say maybe stagnant at this point in time, being that they are 4-4 and probably making an upgrade at quarterback, going from Anthony Richardson to Joe Flacco. Another team where, boy, this could be a moment where they either basically take the opportunity to rally and say, let's not feel this feeling ever again, is the Chicago Bears letting a game slip through their fingers or bounce off the tips of their fingers, I should say. Two of the most embarrassing things I've ever seen in the NFL happened last week, with Anthony Richardson asking to be taken out of the game, tapping the helmet. This also comes after an interview, I think either this off season, where he said that the NFL was actually easier than college. Doesn't seem like it, bud. And then at the end of the Commanders Bears game, I mean, this started going viral all over the place and was instantly turned into a meme as well of Tyreek Stevenson for the Chicago Bears. As the Hail Mary play is starting, he is talking S to the Washington Commanders fans in the stadium. Apparently, it came out too that his role was to follow Noah Brown that entire play. Noah Brown was the one that ended up catching the touchdown pass that was tipped to him. He went and tried to go and be the hero and tip the Hail Mary or knock it down, and instead it bounced off his hand directly into Noah Brown's, and Washington wins and gives them a now, what is it, 6-2 record is what they're sitting at right now. 6-2, best, a good for second in the NFC. Also, what a world. I mean, you ask 15-year-old Joe or tell 15-year-old Joe, 20-year-old Joe, 25-year-old Joe, that in the year 2024, 2025, the teams that are going to be leading the NFC are going to be the Detroit Lions and the Washington Commanders. Like, that is insane. Goes to show what coaching will do, goes to show what ownership will do. But the Commanders trending up, the Bears, again, this could be a moment for them where they either just crumble. And it looks like Tyreek Stevenson is also being benched and has been benched this week and has not been taking it very well. Mm. So this is he pulled himself out of practice on Wednesday when he learned he wasn't starting this week and it didn't go over well in the locker room.
Can't do that.
So again, this is a moment where either the locker room and the team starts to fall apart and Eberflus slowly but surely starts to lose his job. I mean, this is now year three of Matt Eberflus, and it could be one of those where if this team starts to trend in the wrong direction and starts a downward spiral where you then have to say, we need to get someone in here that can take advantage of this team with Caleb Williams on his rookie contract and try and get us into being a contender in the NFC North, which is extremely tough, but just in the NFC in general, because again, what we've seen so far in the last few years and even this year a little bit is, yes, they have a great defense, but if you want to take advantage of what this team is capable of, you might have to look elsewhere at the head coaching position. But we will see as the season progresses. But I don't have a whole lot in what's going to happen. I mean, you still have to face, I'm pretty sure, everybody in the division twice in the NFC North. If you're the Bears, you have to play the Packers twice. You have to play the Lions twice. You have to play the Vikings twice. You also have games against the 49ers. You're playing against the Cardinals today, and the Cardinals are much better than anybody anticipated this year.
Yeah, they're only like 1.5 points separated by the betting line in that one.
So. Seahawks at the end of the year, day after Christmas. That's going to be a tough game. So, I mean, there are really no patsies on this schedule. Unless you want to consider the Patsies, but as we just saw last week, any given Sunday, you can have the Patriots beat the Jets. And so the Bears have probably one of the toughest, I think they do actually, I don't have it up, but I remember looking at it earlier in the week, one of the toughest remaining schedules in the league. So that's a team where it's like, boy, things could come off the rails real quickly.
I mean, it's not quite there yet, but yeah, they still got one of the better offenses, at least options on the offensive end. DeAndre Swift is pretty much guaranteed a touchdown every game if you're a betting guy. So I don't really like look at the offense and get too concerned, although the coaching staff, yeah, that's something to be desired. They don't really know what to do with Roma Dunze. They don't know what to do with Keenan Allen. So it doesn't really seem like Eberflus is the long-term option for Caleb Williams and his long-term success. And if that's the case, you wonder why they're sticking with Eberflus. So maybe, you know, just trying to, like, see if they can squeeze any more blood out of that stone. But I just don't know if you can at this point. And then regarding Washington, man, it's just the opposite. It sounds like Dan Quinn and Cliff Kingsbury and Joe Witt Jr. have such a fun program going on there that it's just a fun organization to be a part of and to walk into a brotherhood, kind of like you hear Dan Lanning talking about with the Oregon Ducks, how he loves coming to work every day. It's obvious that Washington, I mean, what was their offensive coordinator last year? Eric Bieniemy? Yeah, one of the hardest ass coaches in the league. Like, nobody likes working for that dude because he is just so hard of a coach. Like, he really, he gets on his guys, and it's like the no fun league when you're working for him, at least according to many past players. But big old change of culture and like new ownership. It sounds like everything is going peak in Washington, like as good as it could. They could not have asked for anything better.
They got some other efforts on the team, as what Dan Quinn said. That was his line last week in the locker room.
Dan Quinn gives you that the same vibe that Lions head coach. Why am I not
Dan Campbell?
Yeah. Sorry, it totally slipped my mind for a second. I don't know why I couldn't think of his name, but yeah, Dan Quinn gives off those Dan Campbell vibes.
That's what I think you should have in a coach. I think you have to have an alpha male. There are some coaches that can do it and some that try to do it, and you can see right through it. And yeah, I think Dan Quinn is one of those where you can rally behind that guy and run through a wall for him.
Okay. The fighting Dan Quinns.
Yes. Get through this next segment. I believe someone hacked my phone last week. I don't know who sent those pics over to you guys.
Oh yeah, bad pics, huh?
Yeah, I don't know what happened there. Some BS. That is 7-9 BS right there. But it is time for Who Do You Love? Told a sick boy Rashad to send me picks. He has not done so. So hopefully he does so in the next 15 minutes or by the end of the day or by the 1 o'clock window, whatever. If not, we might just have to mark him down for 0-3.
Oh, shame.
That'd be rough. We will get to Who Do You Love? We are just 11 minutes before the 10 a.m. kickoff here, right here on 1080 The Fan. So I went back and checked the tape to get your guys' picks. Rashad, he took Miami, Arizona under, as did I. I was not buying the good news of Tua coming back, and I believe they hit the over by the end of the third quarter. So Rashad and I both take an L there. The Packers, -3 is what you took, Jordan. I texted you guys -3.5, and then I went and checked the tape. You guys gave me the -3.
Yes, we did.
And therefore,
no, we gave you the 3.5.
No. I texted 3.5. And then there is a...
We gave you the better one. We tried to give you whatever the number moved.
So I push on that.
Yeah, so we both push, by the way, because so I took that as well.
So I do not go 0-3. Thank God.
Because 0-2. That 0-2-1.
0-2-1. So that puts me at 9-8-1 on the year. Rashad is at 8-9-1. And Schultzy, you took Bears Commanders over. That did not hit, no, even with enough. Hail Mary. You tie on the Packers, and then the Chiefs did not cover the 8.5 against the Raiders.
No, because of that garbage time touchdown. Damn it, Vegas! That pissed me off so bad. A remote control might have been broken at my house. I'm serious. Yeah, if you were like a dog or a cat in the room with me, what does Sook say? Like, you know, sometimes it's just shameful. Like, I am kind of a shameful person after I lose a bet, and I think that was a little bit of a shameful action on my part.
You're like, I apologize, like I say in the political world, to my constituents. That is not me. What you saw, that is not...
That is not who I am.
That is not who I am. I did not embody that behavior, even though it was me who did that.
Even though you saw me doing exactly what I said I am doing.
That is not me. All right. So, looking around the league, taking a glance at some stuff. Gosh, I mean, the one that stands out to me, but granted, I don't want to try and bet on anything the Cowboys do. Especially not spreads. I mean, if anything, I would take the Falcons over. But that 51.5 over under, that's a lot of points that I feel like the Cowboys would have to score to even match what the Falcons are doing. But I am going to stick with my earlier prediction on this first one. I'm going to jump to that Dolphins-Bills game, and I'm going to take Dolphins to cover the 6.5. I think that having Tua and that offense back to what it was, that will help tremendously for the Dolphins offense. So I'm going to take Dolphins covering the 6.5.
I'm going on the Commanders this week. Minus. It was 3.5, and I think the line is moving to 4. I did get it in with the 3.5, thinking that the Commanders were going to cover in New York. I'm sorry. Daniel Jones has not thrown a touchdown at home yet. We're in game 9 now. And he's still making $40 million. Does this offense know what they're doing? They have Malik Nabers as an option to throw to. I don't understand. And Jaden Daniels has just been one of the best quarterbacks in the league. I think he's fourth or fifth in the MVP conversation right now. Obviously going to win Rookie of the Year, so I think the Commanders cover easily today.
What is the number there, sir?
I'm going to go, I'll say 4. It's at 4 right now, so let's make it harder on myself. Let's go -4.
-4 for the Commanders. Okay, looking around the rest of the league, I see the Chargers and the Browns are playing today in Cleveland. I think Cleveland got the Deshaun Watson no longer quarterback push on that one. I believe that the Chargers are going to win this game, though. I think that they are the better team. They have Justin Herbert at quarterback. While granted, their offense is not nearly as good as it should be because they do not have a lot of weapons, I do like seeing that Ladd McConkey is starting to get involved a little bit more on this offense. He had over 100 yards receiving.
Maybe they can throw him a touchdown.
Last game, he had 2 last week, so maybe that trend continues.
Let's
go,
baby.
But I'm going to go Chargers covering 2 points against the Browns this week.
I like that. All right, I'm going to have to go with, I'm still trying to decide here and also get in my anytime touchdown, big old giant lottery bet today. Do you ever do that? Do you do like all games where you pick a guy to score anytime touchdown and throw up like a 10 or 12 pick, like $2 or $3 on it?
No, because it will be wrong. So I've kind of punted on the parlays, the touchdown parlays.
Dude, the lottos hit every once in a while and it's fun.
Not
it's
mine.
No,
not mine.
No, they will. Keep going. All right, second pick. Actually, let's go with anytime touchdown. Josh Jacobs, Detroit Lions, Green Bay Packers. Josh Jacobs has been scoring, I believe, almost every game this season. He obviously is the top option, though there was injury concern for him. He is expected to play against the Lions today. So if he's playing, I'm assuming he is getting all of those snaps. 2 touchdowns against the Jaguars, no touchdowns at a couple of weeks before that, but I think he's going to be playing, and he will be scoring at least 2 today, because Jordan Love, Malik Willis, who knows?
Say that one more time for me, bud.
Josh Jacobs, anytime touchdown.
Jacobs, anytime touchdown, gotcha. Yeah, that might be one where they're leaning on the run game heavy, I hear you on that. I am going to a disgusting game. And that is the Patriots-Titans, potentially one of the worst matchups. of the entire season. Over under is set at 38.5. Give me the under. You got a matchup of Mason Rudolph versus potentially Jacoby Brissett. I didn't know if Drake May's playing in this or not. I do not know. I do not care. Both of these offenses, these teams are terrible. And because of that, now watch. They're each going to get like a defensive touchdown. One of them's going to get a punt return or like a muffed punt touchdown or something like that. There's going to be some way that they hit the over in just some stupid fashion. But it looks like Drake May is going to be playing today. But I do not trust this game to get over 38.5. So I'm taking the under.
All right, final pick for me is going to be Rams straight up on the money line. I'm getting minus 120 on that pick, and I believe with the Rams, two healthy wide receivers in Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp are going to roll over the Seattle Seahawks. I just don't think that Geno Smith's going to be able to show up. It's kind of an every other game thing for him this season, like I was saying. So defense, they're going to be able to give a little bit of effort against the Rams in the first half, but they'll pull away in the second, and they'll get that win. Minus 120 for the Rams today.
All right, so Jordan, you're rolling with Commanders to cover 4, Josh Jacobs anytime touchdown, and the Rams to cover just 1. And then I'm taking the Dolphins to cover 6.5, Chargers -2, Patriots, Titans under 38.5. Everybody out there betting, good luck. Rashad, damn you for not sending in your picks. I will give him one more text and be like, you've got like 2 minutes. If you got any of these 10 a.m. games that you want to throw on here. But that is who do you love? We need a bounce back week, you and I both.
No kidding. I need a bounce back like half of the season, brother.
Yes. After both of us going 0-2-1 last week, we need some dubs. We need some dubs. All right. Hour number 2 coming up. We're going to jump into the college football section of the show because we had a Ducks victory. We had a couple upsets, and we get our first college football playoff rankings coming up this week. So let's take a look at the college football Saturday that was. Football Sunday right here, 1080 The Fan, hour 2 coming up next.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
We're doing hour number 1 again.
Just deja vu all over.
Daylight savings time will do that. She's a mother. Hour number 2 here on Football Sunday. You know, watch your NFL, but keep us on the dial. Keep us on the radio dial. Keep us on the app. Keep us on your phone. Tablet, smart speaker, whatever you're doing, as these 10 a.m. games get started here in just a moment's notice. But let's jump over to the college football world. Most importantly, your Oregon Ducks get a win at the Big House. They are now 9-0, first 9-0 start to a season since 2012. The Oregon Ducks, they go into Michigan as 14.5 point favorites. I'm sure there were some people that were happy about how that game ended. I personally wanted them to win by more than 14.5. I very much wanted them to score that touchdown at the end. Thank you very much, Dan Lanning, for not holding back there. Definitely could have just kneed the ball out, but...
Can I say thank you as well? I threw bankroll management out yesterday, and
thank you.
I put my entire, or almost my entire betting account amount onto Oregon to cover that 14. I thankfully, I didn't get 14.5, so I was pushing at the end. I would have gotten my money back. But wow, Dan Lanning, thank you for scoring that garbage time touchdown.
But the Ducks, they win 38-17. Listen, you will never take a road win, especially in Michigan, in the Big House, for granted. That was a great win. I mean, they scored the most points against Michigan at Michigan so far this year. So that is another feather in the cap for this Oregon Duck team. You just wanted to see a dominant victory. Was it dominating the whole entire time? No. I mean, there were a couple moments. I mean, what needs to start happening is faster starts out of halftime break. That is the one thing that needs to start happening. But what I loved was seeing Dylan Gabriel have another great game. Jordan James eclipsing another 100-yard mark. And we're starting to see some of these other receivers come to life, which is going to be needed because did not look very good for Tez Johnson on the sideline, getting injured on the third play of the game. Looks like maybe a separated shoulder, maybe a broken collarbone. I don't know if we've seen just yet if there has been a report out on what that is exactly, but after...
We're not going to hear exactly what it is.
No, no.
Dan Lanning keeps it close to the
vest. Upper body injury, as they say.
But yeah, when it's in a sling and Tez Johnson was in street clothes by halftime and then actually had to go back to the locker room again, I don't know if you heard, so it sounds like they were having trouble with it while he was still standing there, even after he got out of his dress. It's just like, ugh, that ain't good.
Yeah, so you're going to need the receiver room to step up now. It was nice seeing Justice Lowe. I mean, he finished with, gosh, it felt like five or six catches yesterday at least. Yeah, he finishes with six catches for 45. Terrence Ferguson back in the fold. Good to see him back and healthy. But Trayshawn Holden, we are a few weeks removed from the spitting incident against Ohio State. And now he is very much back in the fold, going six catches for 149. Also, Evan Stewart, he did get a touchdown yesterday, but he should have got two if it wasn't for an offensive lineman downfield. One of the most insane grabs I have ever seen. And he definitely should have had that touchdown.
Yeah, what does Pat Mahomes say? That play should have counted because it was so cool?
Because it was so cool.
There you go.
Based on cool factor, we are picking up the flag. That is that is the rule there.
It sucked. It was just almost such a perfect play, but because Dylan Gabriel faked the run, one of his linemen started to make that block upfield because he thought he was going to run, and then that's at that moment when Gabriel tossed it over the top, and at the moment that he tossed it, that referee threw the flag, and it's like, dang it!
So, good game overall. Again, I think that the biggest improvement has got to be getting out to those better starts in the second half, keeping that foot on the gas pedal. Michigan started to get a little bit momentum, and, you know, give credit where credit is due. Davis Warren for Michigan played a little bit better than anticipated. That offense played probably a little bit better than anticipated. So that's what you want to see, is just maintain that momentum going into the halftime locker room and into halftime. And that would be the biggest thing coming out of this one. And then again, the injuries, not just Tez Washington, but Harper, right guard, going down for the Ducks. I mean, this offensive line has played so fantastic this year, ever since the first few games, and solidified. So seeing one of your offensive line, and then they went right after the backup right away. Mason Graham for Michigan, who's going to be a first round pick, he just bull rushed the backup guard. I forget who was in, but they were able to get to Gabriel. It wasn't a sack, but they just showed that they are vulnerable.
Well, if it was Pickard, I couldn't see who it was either, but if it was Pickard, we understand why. Because I don't know if they have another injury on the line, if they're going to go right back to Charlie Pickard, who was the kid that they had at center after moving Laulu over to guard, who was supposed to be their original starting center. So if it's Pickard coming in again, like, yeah, that's probably going to be an issue. We heard former Oregon Duck lineman Jeff Schwartz talking on his podcast and then even tweeting out several times, like, this kid cannot play at this level. And I'm sorry, not trying to knock the guy, but at least it's obvious to this point he is not ready to play Oregon football.
He's just a kid, Jordan. Dear God.
I get it, but he probably shouldn't be in there.
Marcus Harper, Dan Lanning shared an update on Marcus Harper's injury after the game. Dan Lanning, quote, "He told me in the locker room he's going to be fine. Obviously, we want to make sure we get him assessed and take a look at that, but I don't know that we have an update right now." So
he walked off under his own power, which was good to see. Yeah. A lot different than the Tez injury.
So the Ducks, they get the win. They will come back home and they will face the mighty Toros of Maryland next week, who had a bye week. So Maryland's going to be coming off of a bye. But as the trend that we've seen in the Big Ten, teams having to travel 2+ time zones
to face our opponent,
it has not gone well for those teams.
And this is Maryland's longest flight of the season, I believe, because USC went to Maryland. So,
yeah, I mean, I'm looking at their schedule right now. They've gone to Minnesota, they've gone to Indiana, and they've gone to Virginia.
So 2 hours maximum to this point?
Yeah, I mean, looking at that, I would say that Minnesota's the longest flight.
Yeah, maybe three from there. Maybe. Yeah,
so this is going to be, Oregon, I don't know what actually, let's find out right now, because I was saying last night with my buddies after the game that, and I'm not looking, but I said that they should open, and it's probably not going to be this because it's a lot, as a 28.5-point favorite against Maryland.
I said three touchdowns, but okay.
It's at home, and again, that's probably way too much. But again, Maryland is not good, and Oregon is very, very good. So the line, I don't see anything just yet. I'm going to have to jump on Vegas Insiders and see what they put down there. But the Ducks, they get the win against Michigan. They should be going into Wisconsin week 10-0. Plain and simple. There is no reason for them to have to worry about this Maryland game. Just take care of business. Take care of business, for God's sakes.
Yeah, excited to see what Oregon's going to be able to do hosting Maryland for. I'll have to look at the numbers to see like if this has ever happened before, if it's like the first time in like 40 years.
What the Maryland-Oregon tradition history is
the
like.
The Ducks-Terrapins historical matchup history. Yeah, no. I'm interested to see Maryland come here and just kind of see a new team. It's kind of the fun part of the Big Ten, because really I expect Oregon to get the easy win, and thankfully they were able to get it done against Michigan in fairly easy fashion for most of the game. But two things that I want to see them improve on, by the way, one, and that same thing as you, Joe, and that is them coming out of the second half and actually being ready. That three and out against an Ohio State, I mean, they're lucky if they get the win against a team like Ohio State or like Alabama in the college football playoff. If you come out of the second half and you go three and out, whether or not you're the first guys to get the ball or not, like, you've got to have a better plan than that. And I don't know if it's the play calling. I don't know if at those particular moments, like, Michigan just read exactly what y'all were doing, but it just didn't seem like Oregon was ready at that point. And it's not just against Michigan. They gave this stat out, Will Ortner and Ryan Buckley did last night on our Ducks postgame scoreboard show. Every single quarter besides the third, Oregon has scored like 20 to 40 points.
Yeah, I
want to
say
season.
That it's they've scored like 3 points.
Yeah, yeah. Oregon is literally in the third quarter all season scored 3 points. It's been one of the heel or one of their Achilles heels, and it's just super frustrating to see a team that we thought last year kind of had some issues, like playing a full 60-minute game, coming out to start the game, coming out to start the second half. Well, seems like they fixed half of that, but they haven't fixed, you know, everything. And I understand to take, you know, a few games to kind of get all these transfers in on the same page and to get everybody gelling, you know, that's fine. Early season struggles, like a Boise State win by 3, that makes a little bit more sense to me. But now at this point, 9-0, you should be coming out of the second half bull rushing the other team. Michigan is not good. And then the second thing that they need to improve on is keying in on any team that has one weapon and one weapon only. Colston Loveland absolutely killed y'all yesterday. He went for 112 yards. He was the only target that Davis Warren had. And I guess to answer that, double team the hell out of the dude all the time. Make anybody else beat you. And maybe I'm wrong. I'm no defensive coordinator, but I feel like it's much better to let the other lesser athletes like Tyler Morgis, like Samaj Morgan, like Peyton O'Leary, force them to be the ones to be athletes and get the touchdowns and actually beat you and get those tough catches up the middle instead of their best option in Colston Loveland. I did not like that Oregon just kind of let him go. Against Ohio State, when you got Jeremiah Smith, when you got Emeka Ekpuga, you get it. They're going to give up 80 to 100 yards. One or two of them's probably going to score a touchdown in each game. That's just what Ohio State does. But when Oregon faces off against a team like Michigan that's just not good anymore this year and they've only got one weapon, I don't want to see that weapon do anything. So yeah, those two things. Just come out better in the third quarter, come out stronger, and key in on the one weapon that a team has.
Well, again, I think Davis Warren had just played better than anybody was anticipating. I mean, he was
probably
making
fair.
Some good throws. He was, yeah, I didn't turn the ball over. I think that's one thing that you want to see improved as well, is the defensively start getting a little bit more pressure. I mean, Mateo Uyunglele, he did have that forced pressure that led to a fumble Davis Warren it fumbled off the backside of one of his linemen. But I would, you know, no turnovers force it. I don't know if they got a sack yesterday.
No, they did not. And Davis Warren did have a lot of time to throw. And that is credit to Michigan's not really good. They don't have great skill players or a decent quarterback. But if you give any quarterback 6 to 8 seconds to throw, it's going to go badly for you on the defensive end.
Yeah, so the Ducks, a couple injuries, but hopefully Marcus Harper is going to be back next week, and you'll still have a fully healthy offensive line. Tez Johnson, though, that's going to be a killer, but that's where, again, you're just going to need a lot of these receivers. But, I mean, you look at you're five deep as far as options go.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Holden, Lowe, Evan Stewart, Terrence Ferguson, Kenyon Sadiq. You're looking pretty good as far as depth, but man, it's going to be interesting to see how the rest of this season goes without Tez Johnson. Back maybe for a playoff run.
Thank God they got Terrence Ferguson back from his appendectomy, because with that addition, that allows Kenyon Sadiq possibly to slide out, play some of the slot, and then maybe catch some of those middle balls that Tez Johnson isn't there. And also, guys, Duck fans should be so proud of Treshawn Holden and having a guy like that represent your team. I mean, so much different than like a Jeremiah Masoli, so much different than like a LeGarrette Blount back in the day. And I know LeGarrette eventually came back later in the season after that punch of Byron Howe, but he didn't really have the same success that he did before. Treshawn Holden owned his mistake, literally sat there and was like, all right, I've got to keep mentally strong and mentally ready, waiting for this opportunity. And he hasn't missed a beat, dude. 150 yards receiving? Yeah, Oregon is five deep, and they've got two legitimate NFL talents, possibly three right now, in Holden and Tez Johnson and Evan Stewart.
Yeah, reading Dylan Gabriel ended on this, what he had to say about Treshawn Holden after the Ohio State incident, the way he's practiced, even the past 2 weeks. It's different. I respect him for it. Extremely proud of him. Told him that, but got a bunch of belief in him as a player and a person. You just look at a guy that week, and then you look at him now. He's worked his butt off to get to this point. I effing love it for him. I do. I want people to know that there's before and after. There's growth. If you've seen our team, we've continued to grow each week. He's a direct example of that. So
love it.
Trending up, Ducks get a win. Welcome in Maryland next week. Just a storied matchup between the Maryland Terrapins and the Oregon Ducks. Yeah, we'll have to look up what that historical context is, because I don't know if they have like ever played each other. But let's move on to the rest of the college football world. Oregon State, they had a bye week, much needed bye week this week, but there was plenty of other college football going on. It was a very light week, though. There was not a game. There wasn't a single 7 o'clock, 7:30 kick last night.
I know.
Which was disappointing. I love watching college football up until like 11:30 at night.
Last Saturday, you were able to watch it until like 2 a.m. because Hawaii started at like, what, 8 or 9? It was a late kick. I was watching football, like college football, at 11:45 last Saturday night.
All right, move on to the rest of college football. We had a big top five matchup, and we had a few top 12 teams take their first loss of the season or second loss. One of them, not surprising at all, but we get into that next. The rest of the college football landscape here on hour number two, Football Sunday, 1080 The Fan. Looking at the rest of the college football landscape, just a few days before we get our first college football rankings. Boy, it's going to be a rough Tuesday for some folks. They could have a big loss in the election cycle, and then maybe their team doesn't show up in the rankings the way they hoped.
I'm not looking forward to however the world's going to react.
Oh, my God, there's people protesting in Georgia and Athens because Georgia is ranked third in the college football playoff rankings? Oh, it's not what I was expecting, Tom. Oh, my God. Penn State students with torches, breaking glass,
could you
because
imagine?
They're outside of the top 10 now.
Like a quad box of like real election protests and then college football playoff ranking protests.
We got the octo box here. We got protests everywhere.
Checking in on the violence.
It is the witching hour.
Oh my God, yeah, it's the protest witching hour.
Taking a look at the college football landscape, some of these top 25 matchups. Georgia escapes Florida. They are possibly a DJ Lagway injury away from losing that game. They were losing that game. And then they had to throw in their essentially third string quarterback because Graham Mertz is injured right now. DJ Lagway, I don't know if it was like a pulled hammy or if it was knee injury. I have yet to see the update on what the injury is, but he has been the only bright spot of that offense when he's played that year, and they were leading, and then he went out, and then they were not leading anymore very quickly. Georgia was able to turn it on. Man, Carson Beck, he is a mess. That offense is gross right now. They need to start figuring some stuff out. But Georgia, the number two team in the land, they live to fight on another day. 34-20 victory. The biggest matchup, of course, was number three versus number four. Two coaches that are absolutely desperate for a big win. And Ryan Day and his Ohio State Buckeyes, they are able to pull it off because they have an offense. Penn State doesn't. Penn State literally scored their one and only touchdown in the first quarter, like I believe on Ohio State's second drive of the day on a pick six. And after that, Penn State was able to do absolutely nothing on offense. Again, I've said this before to my buddy who I do a podcast with. I do not trust Drew Aller because he's got that broccoli haircut. I do not trust anybody with that. If you are a college football quarterback and you have that type of haircut, I do not trust you. Drew Aller, I think Dylan Raiola also has this haircut as well. Do not trust him, as Nebraska has lost like 3-4 straight games now and lost to UCLA yesterday.
Oh, God. I don't trust Dylan Raiola. Anybody that says they look like another superstar, and which means they will play like said superstar, is just out immediately in my book.
While it is not a top 25 matchup, if Nebraska ends up not going to a bowl game after starting 5-1 this year, I am going to die laughing. Because talk about a complete 180 from where that season was going to where it is now. You lost to UCLA. UCLA cover monsters. Unbelievable. So Ohio State, they win. They're going to jump up to 3, possibly even number 2 with how Georgia looked with Florida. I'm intrigued to see what the College Football Playoff Committee does there.
If Georgia gets 1 first place vote like they did last week, like I will be shocked.
Well, John Wilner still has his vote.
Well, his explanation as to why what was it? Georgia's,
like, I didn't even read it.
It was that their touchdown or 2 loss to Alabama is better still than Oregon's early season close wins, essentially. And it's really just a shaded way of saying that the SEC is always going to be better than the Big Ten or Pac-12 teams moving to the Big Ten, which I think is bullsh, but, you know, I digress.
Roll through the rest of some of these. Miami rolled against Duke, putting up 53 points. Cam Ward, 400 passing yards and 5 touchdowns. Woof. Tennessee, they are able to have a better second half than the first. They have been a terrible first half team the last few weeks, and they are able to take care of Kentucky, win 28-18. But yeah, Tennessee, they have just been, granted, their first...
Yikes.
Their first few games, I mean, and you'd want to look at their schedule. Yes, they beat Alabama, but they, I mean, against Florida, against Arkansas, Oklahoma, and now Kentucky, they have had some slow starts. So, yes, they got the win against Alabama, but, you know, Alabama is kind of showing that they're not the same Alabama from years past. No,
thank God for their running back. I think Sampson's his name. He had like 2 tutties last night for the Volunteers.
142 and 2 touchdowns. Yeah,
otherwise, they would be nowhere.
And one of the least surprising upsets of the week, Texas A&M losing to South Carolina. Me and my buddy, we were talking about potential upsets. Where were the upsets of the week that could happen? And that was one of them that we circled. South Carolina is a good team. They almost beat Alabama earlier in the year. They have a really good defensive line. They whooped on Oklahoma the week before. They barely lost to LSU earlier in the season. So we saw that game, being that it was at South Carolina too. We were like, you know, Texas A&M, yeah, they were leading or undefeated in SEC play to start this year. I believe they were 5-0 going into this. Yeah, correct. 5-0 going into this game in SEC play. They get their first SEC loss fall 44-20 against South Carolina.
You got a freshman quarterback. Marcel Reed's good, right? But it's going to happen, you know, a time or two a year. You're going to stumble, and or it's not like he's got the experience to lead you, you know, in these games in the trenches. He's literally doing this for the first time. So.
But, you know, if you look at that Texas A&M team, having him at quarterback, I would much rather have him play than Connor Weigman.
Oh, of course. Oh, I agree. 1,000%.
Which you would talk about when you want to talk about cringy quarterbacks, he's one of them.
No, sometimes when you're good, you're good. Chip Kelly literally pushed Darren Thomas out of Eugene to install Marcus Mariota in as a quarterback as a freshman, right? But there were still some stumbling blocks along the way. Marcel Reed obviously has that talent. His coaches know he is that good, but good enough to develop on the fly, but he's still going to have some stumbling blocks. And I'm not saying the game was lost because of him, but he's not experienced enough to get you over the top, especially when South Carolina had such a good game on offense. My goodness, they ran the ball just all game.
And then two teams that were both ranked 11 because they had the same amount of voting points as each other. Iowa State and Clemson, both ranked 11 and both catching L. Texas Tech beats Iowa State in a rainy game in Ames, Iowa. And Iowa State gets their first loss of the season. And Louisville going into Clemson at night. I mean, seeing the Clemson Stadium in a night game, like that is a crazy environment at Memorial Stadium there. But Louisville, unshaken, unwavered. And Dabo, rightfully so, catching some major heat for how he was handling the end of the game. They score a touchdown to go down 26-13, pending extra point or two-point conversion.
Yeah.
But they say, it's like, dude, you got to go for the two-point conversion, because then that will put you down by
11, which is a two-point touchdown
and two-point and a field goal, and he kicks the extra point.
What are you doing?
So now you have to score two touchdowns.
Yeah, so and it's giving yourself the opportunity to not have to do that, and if you lose out, you're pretty much forced to and still in the same position that you are now either way, and to not give yourself that opportunity, wow. So in-game management, along with not going to the transfer portal, starting to plague Dabo Swinney, eh?
Yeah, and
it makes too much money.
And then it ended up turning into a moot point because Clemson tried to do an onside kick, which again, if you go for two and you get that two-point conversion, you're not having to do an onside kick with 6 minutes left in the game. Louisville gets the ball at Clemson's 45 and then immediately scores on a 45-yard touchdown right after that to go up 33-14 at that point.
I can't believe that these guys
over.
I can't believe these guys don't have like a time management coach.
I'm sure they do. It's just a matter of, yeah, well, no, we're not going to do that.
But literally, there should be like a rostered coach spot that is named the time management coach. It shouldn't just be like an additional duty. Like, I'm paying this guy $60,000, $100,000 a year to come in and specifically tell me, okay, hey, here's the situation. Not everybody is a savant like Dan Lanning, able to just pull these situations out of his booty at a moment's notice. It sounds like Dabo needs some serious help there.
Let's take a break and go through the rest of the top 25. And there is a Big Ten matchup that we need to go over because it's against two teams that are very much not liked in this area of the country. So it's kind of it's mixed emotions watching the game. But I was definitely happy with how it turned out. We get to that next here. The rest of Hour 2, our college football talk here on Football Sunday. But first, Schultzy, SportsCenter Update.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
Text from Jeff Deal on the Vancouver Ford text line. Dabo does have a time management coach. He's called God.
Thank you, Deal.
And
well,
that
he needs to check in with him a little bit more freaking often.
That just inspired me to go to one of my best resources on the internet, good old ChatGPT.
Yes.
Where I said, can you give me some puns that have to do with football and excuses that Dabo Swinney would say that involves religion? And it gave me five here. Sometimes when the game gets tough, I think of it as divine interception. It's all part of a higher playbook.
Yes, divine interception.
When we get to the red zone, it's not just about the strategy. It's about having faith that we can score both on the field and in our lives.
Well, I mean, yes, but yeah, you want to focus on that 60-minute game first there, Dabo.
God, ChatGPT, man.
It's
just on point sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes it really does nail it.
Our game plan is always inspired from above. When we follow that divine guidance, we can tackle any obstacle.
Hey, man. I'm just assistant to the head coach above.
Go Clemson.
Yeah.
Go Clemson. All right. The rest of college football. Kurt Cignetti, he has got Indiana just trucking along. Just an absolute horse right now.
They got Rourke back, don't they?
They do. And they actually trailed for their first time ever this season. They were down 10-0 at the end of the first quarter. And what did they do? They win 47-10. 47 unanswered points for Indiana. Right now, them and Oregon The only undefeated teams in this first new rendition of the Big Ten. How about that?
Cool.
Props to Kurt Cignetti. He has just brought an attitude to that team, Indiana, where they just it is unreal to see how efficient they have been this year on offense. And just absolutely just trucking through teams. It is, it's been quite fun. I mean, almost slipped up against Washington, but ended up pulling it out. The rest of their slate goes as follows. They got Michigan next week. Then they will go to Ohio State 2 weeks after that. So they'll get Ohio State after a bye week. And then in-state rivalry against Purdue to finish the year, which will definitely be a W because Purdue is, in fact, the worst team in the Big Ten.
That Boilermaker's not good. It's like Kirk Cignetti thought, oh, hey, maybe I need to act a little bit more like a Pac-12 team coming in. Not totally, but having a high-powered offense is a good thing. Hey,
yes.
Hey, Big Ten coaches, offense is good.
Run through the rest of these top 25 matchups. Kansas State, that is a bad loss, losing to Houston 24-19. And also having that game in the bag, essentially.
I know.
And then losing that game, giving up 14 points in the second half. I mean, that is just not good. I mean, the Big 12, for the most part, was starting to look kind of wide open. I know that Iowa State was undefeated going into this week, as was BYU. BYU getting a bye, of course. But that is still pretty wide open. And you came in at 4-1, and you lose to Houston, who is not a good offense. That's Bad loss on their part. The rest of the schedule, ACC matchup, big ACC matchup, because you had two undefeated ACC teams and SMU and Pittsburgh going into this one. SMU, they have totally turned this season around. Granted, earlier in the year when they lost to BYU, it was one of those like, huh? Like, how, man, you're supposed to be one of the better teams in the college football landscape this year. They started slow against Nevada their very first game, and then taking that loss to BYU, it's just like, man, maybe SMU is not as good as we thought. Well, BYU is undefeated, so they are clearly better than we thought, and SMU right now is tied with Miami for the ACC lead. They are 5-0. So God. SMU getting a big win there.
What a comeback for SMU.
Their season schedule in the ACC, it wraps up pretty nice, too. You have Boston College, Virginia, California. You very well could see SMU winning out and going to the ACC championship.
It only took them 40 years after the death penalty, but they are back because now everybody can pay players.
So SMU bouncing back after their slow start to the season. And again, that is got to be one of the easiest final three games as far as what you're looking at to end the year. Boston College, Virginia, Cal to end their ACC schedule. Army, they continue their undefeated season, beating Air Force 20-3. So good for them. We are getting closer and closer to the huge Army-Navy game where we could potentially have an undefeated Army. Notre Dame is on their schedule coming up soon. So Notre Dame, they could have been very patriotic and losing last week to Navy, but they cared about winning more. Shame on them.
Oh, darn it.
So hopefully Notre Dame can win back some Americans by throwing the game against Army, as they should. If they want to show their true patriotic side, they will lose that game against Notre Dame.
Wouldn't be surprised if they
or
do.
Or against Army.
I'm not really in on Marcus Freeman, though.
So. No, I'm not either, so I don't blame you there. But Notre Dame has responded to their early season woes as well. And then Illinois, boy, they are starting to fall off.
The wheels are coming off, aren't they?
But good for P.J. Fleck, rowing the boat, baby. They get the win 25-17 over Illinois. And so Minnesota, I mean, they might find themselves in the top 25 in this college football ranking that will start on Tuesday.
But speaking of Big Ten teams with limited offense, Illinois, who was ranked like just a couple weeks ago when they faced Oregon.
Yeah, I mean, they were ranked again in this game against Minnesota, but they will probably fall out of the rankings.
Yeah, sorry, when the new ones. Yeah, they were ranked this week.
Yeah.
They won't be.
No, they will not. But one Big Ten matchup last night that happened was against the Washington Huskies and the USC Trojans. And, you know, as Oregon fans, Jordan, we obviously dislike Washington. But there is something great about seeing USC lose the way that they did last night.
I hate Lincoln Riley. And I'm like looking at these two teams just like, which one do I hate more right now, and I had to go with USC. I just Lincoln thinking that he can get any kind of win against any team with no track record at USC to back him up, like, no way. And it just showed last night that their defense ultimately couldn't play a 60-minute game. That there's, even with, like, I like Miller Moss's talent, but I like Will Rogers' talent a little bit better on the other side, and they still have Giles Jackson on their side, and they still have a couple of guys left over on the defensive side of the ball for Washington as well. Not everybody left, so good for Washington getting that win, but both teams suck, and I hate them.
USC, though, I mean, you have the lead going into the fourth quarter, and then you throw an interception. I mean, you go up 21-20, you force Washington to punt, so you're hoping to score again, go up by eight, go up by nine, whatever. And then you throw a pick, give the ball right back to them, and then Washington is able to score to go up.
Yeah, then, on an 80-plus yard drive, too. That was, I mean, I think it took, what, at least 4 minutes off the clock, and then USC missed a field goal, so Washington at that point kind of just took it over.
No. So Washington scored about 2.5 minutes. I don't know if you're thinking of the USC drive, but...
Oh, yeah, I think I'm transposing them. My bad.
Washington was able to score and go up 26-21. USC was then able to drive down the field, 15 plays, 77-yard drive, 8.5 minutes off the clock. And they get down all the way to the goal line. And it was one of the more head-scratching play call display I have seen from USC. And they get first and goal at the 4. They try and run the ball. They get 2 yards. And so Washington sort of shuts it down. And the commentator in that game, I forget who it even was, he's like, yeah, if you're USC right here, you just keep running that ball to the left side until you punch it in. Just keep doing that, like, because they're not going to be able to stop it. So their second down play, they then try to throw the ball and pass the ball, incomplete. They then go and back to the run game. They do get stopped for 1 yard. And then on fourth and goal from the 1 yard line, they run a zone read at a shotgun. And so... you need 1 yard. You're at the goal line. What should we do? Oh, let's back ourselves up
4 yards,
4 yards by running a run play out of shotgun. And Washington comes right in, blows the play up, 3 yard loss, turnover on downs for USC.
It's a guaranteed tush push situation. You have to put them as close to the line as possible and just give them some push, right? That's the best way to get in there.
And then
send them under the center, something.
Well, and then they have a chance after that to score with about less than, I mean, they get the ball with like 1.5 minutes left.
Oh, and they actually drove down the field.
Yeah, and they're at the 14, and then you get 4 straight incompletions from Miller Moss and the USC Trojans.
That was good pasty, though.
To see them have the lead and then go interception, downs, and downs to lose that game. Again, I know, like, it's one of those lose-lose, like either Washington wins or USC wins, and I don't like either of that, but... seeing how USC gacked that game, that was, I very much appreciated that. I liked the way that ended. And then I saw this and I tweeted it out. Apparently, in Lincoln Riley's press conference last night, he says, and I quote, "It's not like we're getting our ass kicked," end quote.
Well, oh, God.
So.
Lincoln.
One of the best responses I saw for that was a USC fan saying, "I'm about to kick his ass."
That is a good response. Like, a loss is a loss, right? I'm sorry. You can't.
No moral victories.
No, you can't sit there if you're a team sitting at 4-5 and you're telling the media week after week, well, you know, that game was close. Again, well, that game was close. At some point, these losses add up, and it's obvious that you can't make the move at the big point of the game.
So USC now falls to 4-5.
Yikes.
Back-to-back seasons with 5 losses. Through the first 36 games as USC head coach, Clay Helton, 27-9, Lincoln Riley, 23-13.
Get him out.
Well, you're going to be paying a lot. And you paid that dude's mortgage, too.
Yeah, you did.
You paid that dude's mortgage in Oklahoma to come to L.A. Like, I cannot believe it.
Remember when USC was, like, the job? Remember when Lane Kiffin was leaving Tennessee after a season to take the USC job when Pete Carroll hightailed it to the NFL? Like, this used to be such a prestigious position. And Lincoln Riley took it with like the prestige almost gone. And he took on all the risk here. And look at what is happening to Lincoln Riley's tenure. Oh, my God.
I'm trying to think of like all the Power Four conferences. Like, who is, I mean, I would say that probably the most embarrassing team this year is Florida State, considering them being a top 10 team and where they're at now, being able to not score any points, have one of, if not the worst offenses in college football.
Like, Mike Norvell should be ashamed.
And you want to talk about a guy that have fun paying that contract and how do you get that program back to prominence.
That's coach. I mean, they fired Taggart. Who they fired Manny Diaz before that. Like, they're literally on their third coach since Jimbo Fisher left them. So,
and they're of course writing articles on the Tallahassee Democrat.
Oh God.
About what that contract buyout is looking like, because he signed an 8-year, $84 million contract in January.
Sorry, Manny Diaz was Miami. I'm just thinking.
Correct.
Taggart.
Yeah.
My bad.
Yeah. All good. So I mean, Florida State has got to be up there as far as most embarrassing year so far for a big Power Four conference or a Power Four team, rather.
They spent a lot of transfer NIL money, like, to get guys in there. What are you gonna do, man?
But I would say that USC, as far as expectations and that program and the allure that comes with USC, they have got to be number two as far as most embarrassing season, most embarrassing team in Power Four. Some of these teams that are bad, we're not surprised that they're bad, right? Like Purdue, 0-5. Oh no. Like, yeah, we know Purdue sucks, right? Maybe you could make the case for Oklahoma State being 0-6 in conference, right? Mike Gundy usually has a pretty good team, but they are 0-6 and they have gacked some games.
Yeah, they were starting the season supposed to be a powerhouse.
I mean, Arizona, perhaps, right? I mean, them being 1-5 in conference play.
Nebraska, I think, is a good, you know, good team in that combo.
The way that they've been playing lately, yeah. But I would say as far as teams with higher expectations to start the season, I mean, if you want to take a look at what was the top 25 to start the year, right? We could go down that list, right? The preseason top 25, looking at it right now. You know, Georgia, Ohio State, Oregon, blah, 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 kind of going down the list here. I mean, Florida State, as well documented, was number 10 coming into this season. Utah, obviously that's kind of injury laden, but them being number 12 coming into this season. USC was number 23 to start this season. So not as high as I thought, but also them getting a win against LSU to start the year. Like, people thought, like, all right, this USC team, they could be back, right? They get a win against LSU in the season opener. That's a huge win for them. And they have gone on to go 3-5 since then, with wins against Utah State, Wisconsin, and Rutgers. And if you saw Wisconsin yesterday against Iowa, they're looking like fool's gold after their last few weeks. Just bad. Bad, dude. I don't know what you do. I mean, if you want to talk about buyouts for Norvell, what's the Lincoln Riley buyout look like?
I don't know. I know that Dan Lanning was like ninth in overall buyouts, and I'm not sure Lincoln's was higher than that.
Well, and you just start to lose the locker room. Your words fall on deaf ears. Like, these players, they could have your back, but again, what you start to say after a while, it doesn't hold weight, and then you lose inspiration. I mean, it's bad. It is so bad in USC, and I couldn't be happier.
Let's see here. I don't think.
I mean, Arizona, Kansas were also top 25 ranked teams to start the year. But again, like, you don't expect, like,
Lincoln Arizona, Riley's buyout isn't even in the top 30.
Arizona and Kansas do not have the prestige and the reputation that comes with that job and that school, and as far as what the expectations are, right? So, yeah, it's bad.
According to numbers, Willie Fritz at $19 million is the 30th highest buyout in college football. So,
who?
Willie Fritz for Houston.
Oh, God.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, and we're looking at, like, Hugh Freeze around, you know, PJ Fleck, kind of guys around that, like, 19.
At least Minnesota's good.
$5 million number. Mike Gundy has a $25 million buyout.
No, he's not. He's going to be there until he dies.
Napier with the Gators has a $26 million buyout. But yeah, so what I'm saying is a guy like Lincoln Riley's probably not too expensive to move on from at this point. I mean, this is what, his third or fourth season there?
This is, if he's 23-13 through, yeah, this, that's his, I think this makes his fourth season.
And at that point when he was hired...
Head coach since 21. So 21, 22. This would be his fourth season, yes.
I don't think it's necessarily like Lincoln Riley. He was a big name, but he wasn't like the biggest name. I don't think it's necessarily a situation where Lincoln Riley had all the negotiating power, you know, over USC regarding a buyout. So,
Oh, yeah, deal putting in here USC private university. He won't be listed as one of his contracts.
Oh, thank you. Of course. See, I always forget that. Yeah, USC, they never have to put any of these, so we don't know what the hell it's going to be. It could be in the middle of the pack.
All right, we got a couple minutes left in the show. Let's wrap things up here. Football Sunday, 1080 The Fan. All right. Looking at the college football slate for next week, not a lot of, like, huge matchups that I'm seeing. I mean, the only top 25 matchup I'm seeing at this moment is Georgia Ole Miss. Oh, we got Alabama LSU.
It kind of ruffles my skirt a little bit.
Let's see what else here. Yeah, that's about it. We got the Holy War, but that doesn't really matter because Utah sucks. So, yeah, I mean, Purdue, Ohio State. Ohio State's going to roll. Miami, Georgia Tech. Miami should roll. That is in Atlanta, Florida at Texas. Yeah, there's not a whole lot that gets my goat right now. Yeah, I mean, Colorado, Texas Tech. We'll see what happens there because Texas Tech has got a good offense. They're still fighting for a Big 12 crown. With Texas A&M losing yesterday to South Carolina, every SEC team has a loss now.
Love to see it.
So prepare for a wild November when it comes to SEC play. Looking at this Oregon-Maryland matchup for next week, no previous matchups. There is no history between the Terrapins and the Ducks.
So something new.
This is the first matchup ever between these two teams. I will say that, you know, the whole I like Podols clip?
Yes.
That was in Oregon. That was a local broadcast.
Yes, it was.
So
KGW.
Yes. I think it was at some sort of Halloween event or something like that.
Yeah, that or like one of these fairs or festivals here. Yeah.
Yes. But yeah, how about that? This is the first of a very storied long history yet to come between Oregon and Maryland. And right now it's looking like Oregon is opened as like a 25.5 point favorite against Maryland.
All right, so right in between where we said. You said four scores, I said three.
Yeah, yeah. They should absolutely roll. But we are in November. Wild. It happens every year, man. The college football season, NFL season just flies by. And now we are at here at the college football playoff rankings. First one of the season on Tuesday. Jordan, thank you as always, sir.
Appreciate you.
We will catch everybody next week. I believe 8 a.m. is when we're starting next week. I'll have to double check the schedule there as far as what happens with the Seahawks. But Seahawks pregame up next. Seahawks kickoff at 1:25 against the Rams right here on 1080 The Fan. Thank you all for listening to Football Sunday, and we will catch you next week. Peace.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.